by throwing them away, or better yet, by recycling them, or better still, by reusing them, or even by making music with them. In the summer of 1869, naturalist John Muir was living in the Sierra Nevada mountains of California. Awestruck by the natural beauty surrounding him, he wrote the following words about the interconnections among the living and non-living beings in nature. "When we try to pick out anything by itself, we find that it is bound fast by a thousand invisible cords that cannot be broken to everything in the universe." We encourage you to think of these words as you watch the upcoming video.
Exciting scientific findings of the past half century has been the discovery of widespread trophic cascades. A trophic cascade is an ecological process which starts at the top of the food chain and tumbles all the way down to the bottom. And the classic example is what happened in the Yellowstone National Park in the United States when wolves were reintroduced in 1995. Now, we all know that wolves kill various species of animals, but perhaps we're slightly less aware that they give life to many others. Before the wolves turned up, they'd been absent for 70 years, that the numbers of deer, because there was nothing to hunt them, had built up and built up in the Yellowstone Park, and despite efforts by humans to control them, they'd managed to reduce much of the vegetation there to almost nothing. They'd just grazed it away. But as soon as the wolves arrived, even though they were few in number, they started to have the most remarkable effects. First, of course, they killed some of the deer, but that wasn't the major thing. Much more significantly, they radically changed the behavior of the deer. The deer started avoiding certain parts of the park, the places where they could be trapped most easily, particularly the valleys and the gorges. And immediately those places started to regenerate. In some areas, the height of the trees quintupled in just 6 years. Bare valley sides quickly became forests of aspen and willow and cottonwood. And as soon as that happened, the birds started moving. The number of songbirds, of migratory birds, started to increase greatly. The number of beavers started to increase because beavers like to eat the trees. And beavers, like wolves, are ecosystem engineers. They create niches for other species. And the dams they built in the rivers provided habitats for otters and muskrats and ducks and fish and reptiles and amphibians. The wolves killed coyotes. And as a result of that, the number of rabbits and mice began to rise, which meant more hawks, more weasels, more foxes, more badgers. Ravens and bald eagles came down to feed on the carrion that the wolves had left. Bears fed on it too, and their population began to rise as well, partly also because there were more berries growing on the regenerating shrubs. And the bears reinforced the impact of the wolves by killing some of the calves of the deer. Here's where it gets really interesting. The wolves changed the behavior of the rivers. They began to meander less. There was less erosion. The channels narrowed. More pools formed. More riffle sections, all of which were great for wildlife habitats. The rivers changed in response to the wolves. And the reason was that the regenerating forests stabilized the banks so that they collapse less often, so that the rivers became more fixed in their course. Similarly, by driving the deer out of some places and the vegetation recovering on the valley sides, there was less soil erosion because the vegetation stabilized that as well. So the wolves, small in number, transformed not just the ecosystem of the Yellowstone National Park, this huge area of land, but also its physical geography.
Hi. For those of you who don't already know me, my name is Stephen Verla. I moved to East Lansing last summer to start a graduate school program at MSU, where I'm studying environmental sociology and animal studies. I've been coming to UUCGL ever since. As the young adult group was planning this Earth Day-themed service, I volunteered to reflect on my experience with Unitarian Universalism and offer my thoughts on its connection to non-human animals in the environment. However, we agreed that we also really wanted to hear your experiences and thoughts on this connection, and so for that reason, we've decided to make this an interactive reflection. So how this is gonna work, I'll ask you questions throughout the reflection and ask you to text in your responses. So what you need to do is you're texting to the number 22333, and each different question I ask will have a different code associated with it. So the first thing you do is you type in that code, and then you type in your response. So if you have your phones tucked away or you turned them off, thanks for doing that, first of all. Second of all, now it's okay to take those out. Some of the responses will be displayed up on the screen, and I'll read those out loud. And we'll also have time for you to call out a response if, for example, you didn't bring a phone with you or you'd rather not text. And that'll be after I've called out some of the ones up on the screen. So to get started, I want you to think about this following question, and again, send it to 22333 and type 72858 followed by your message. So in a word or two, describe the feeling you had when you first discovered Unitarian Universalism, and I'll do it with you. Amazement, inspired, a new journey began, was up there quickly, curious, comfort, relief, home. Where has this been all my life? At peace. Wow, this fits me. So I think we can all agree with a lot of those. Does anybody have one they'd like to shout out?
Intriguing.
Kids love it here.
Belonging. Great, thank you for that. There'll be opportunities throughout this to participate just like that. So, to talk a little bit about my first experience. I discovered Unitarian Universalism 2.5 years ago at the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Houston, Texas. Although I remember being enthusiastically greeted by the welcome team there, my most distinct memory is of what I saw when I entered the sanctuary. Whereas the Lutheran church I had grown up going to had an imposing wooden cross above the altar, this church had an intricate metal sculpture of a flock of seabirds. And before the minister had spoken a word, I knew that this church would be different from any that I had gone to before. Now, to be fair, I later learned that the seabird sculpture in question was pretty controversial at First UU. Now, some people loved it. Other people hated it, and one of the ministers not so lovingly admitted that when he delivered sermons, he felt as though he belonged on the cover of Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. So maybe I shouldn't have based my first impression on the church, of the church on this sculpture, but still, I believed at the time and continue to believe now that a church that values animals and the environment enough to put a representation of them in so prominent a place deserves a second visit. Now, though that was my first direct experience with UU, I was actually introduced to it a couple of years earlier. As a college senior, I took an environmental science course called Nature and Society. Now, when I signed up for it, I assumed that it would be about ecology and maybe some soil science and things like that. And it definitely did focus on these for a little bit. However, it was a much broader reaching course than that. Its focus was on the interconnections among people, animals, and nature. And the professor believed that while the natural sciences were a very valuable perspective from which to approach this issue, so too were the social sciences and the humanities. And in fact, my biggest takeaway from the course wasn't something about ecology or chemistry. Rather, it was an ethical principle that my professor called the circle of moral community. So now it's time for you to participate again, if you're willing. This time, again, text to the number 22333, but this time I have the code 63621, and then following that, your message. So, sorry, I should read the question first. What word or words come to mind when you hear the phrase circle of moral community? Mutual responsibility. Interdependence. Web of life, empathy, interconnected web, dynamic, interconnected, UU values, my actions affect you. Message of hope. It's always complicated. Would anybody like to call one out?
Acceptance.
Inclusiveness.
Inclusiveness.
Unconditional regard.
Unconditional regard. There's no such thing as independent actors. Thanks again. So I really liked all of those. I think my professor would have been impressed too. But he had his own definition, which was definitely similar. According to him, a circle of moral community is a metaphorical circle enclosing every being a community, society, or individual considers to have moral value. In other words, it's a group including all beings considered to have inherent worth and dignity. People, animals, and nature can all be included in this group, but they can also all be excluded from it. As an example, in the 19th century, American society included white men in its circle, but it excluded non-whites, women, and other marginalized human groups, as well as animals and the environment. Today, our society includes many more once marginalized groups, but it continues to exclude many others. Now, I said this course introduced me to UU, and I didn't misspeak. That being said, my professor never mentioned UU directly. Rather, he addressed the need to think critically about how we as individuals and as a society define our circle. Implicitly, he also called for us to redefine our circle to include human and non-human beings that are currently excluded from it, but shouldn't be. To me, this call to draw our circle wide is the heart of UU. What else can standing on the side of love mean but using our passion and our energy to draw our society's circle wide and hold it there against the forces pulling it back as no longer marginalized beings rush in to join us? To me, that's exactly what UUs have been doing throughout their history, from Theodore Parker and other abolitionists to Augusta Jane Chapin and other suffragists to too many more people to list, including all of those of you in the room. Okay, participation time again. So again, you're going to be texting to 22333. This time the code is 58705. Please take a moment to think of how you have worked to draw our circle of moral community wide and consider texting it in. raising my children to include all, teaching compassion, approaching everyone from a place of love, bringing our children, expanding my views of what's okay, helping our children learn, choosing love over hate, approaching everyone from a place of love, Pride Day participation, welcoming new members, accepting all, playing well with others. Would anybody like to call one out?
Understanding that black and white used to be a movie color.
Understanding that black and white used to be a movie color.
Encouraging others to come.
Encouraging others to come. Did I miss any up there while I was looking away? The politics of acceptance. All right, great. Thanks again. Personally, I believe that I can best honor the UU tradition of drawing the circle of moral community wide by drawing it wider still. As a young adult in a new UU, my work is still in its infancy. However, I would like to take a few minutes to share it with you in the hope that you might offer me your guidance and support and perhaps even join me in it. Think back to the quotation by John Muir I read earlier in the service. When we try to pick out anything by itself, we find that it is bound fast by 1,000 invisible cords that cannot be broken to everything in the universe. Think back to the video we just watched about how wolves change rivers. To me, that quotation and that video epitomize the seventh principle of UU, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. This principle has much to teach us about how to coexist with animals and nature. As the video showed us, living according to it can lead to flourishing species, communities, and ecosystems, all of which can in turn lead to flourishing us. As much as the seventh principle may help us draw our circle wide enough to include non-human beings, some UUs, including myself, believe that it alone isn't enough. Almost two decades after the reintroduction of wolves into Yellowstone National Park, wolf reintroduction in the northern Rocky Mountains has been successful enough that the gray wolf has been federally delisted as an endangered species. However, many scientists have argued that this decision was based more on political values than on sound science, and many states' immediate responses to the delisting suggest that this is in fact the case. Last year, 473 of Idaho's wolves were killed by people through inhumane methods like aerial hunting and leg hold trapping with little, if any, justification. 23 more were killed during Michigan's first wolf hunt in about 50 years, again, with little justification. These people could have peacefully coexisted with these wolves, but they chose not to. And after all, why would they have? Their circles clearly don't include wolves. Somewhat surprisingly, this inhumane, unjustified killing is not in direct opposition to the seventh principle, which calls us to respect the web of all existence, but not necessarily the individual beings that comprise that web. So long as we harvest wolves within their sustainable yield, as humane and unjustified as that killing may be, we will not necessarily harm their ecosystems. The UU Animal Ministry, of which I'm a member, is a group of UUs committed to drawing our circle wide enough to include non-human animals as well as natural systems. Through our first principle project, we aim to promote critical discussion among UU congregations about how we might respond to animal issues like, but certainly not limited to, the wolf hunts recently. The project takes its name from our goal to change the first principle from the inherent worth and dignity of every person to the inherent worth and dignity of every being. We fully understand that our proposed change is controversial, To many UUs, the first principle represents a victory for human rights and the culmination of a lifetime of work, and changing it would lessen this victory and this work. Yet rather than lessening the first principle, we believe that the change would honor it to the extent which it has drawn our, honor the extent to which it has drawn our circle wide by drawing it wider still. Now, I'm committed to drawing our first circle wide by promoting the first principle project in the UU Animal Ministry at UUCGL. And if you're interested in joining me, I would greatly appreciate your support. Even if you disagree with the project's goal or the way in which the UUAM is trying to accomplish it, I would appreciate your feedback too. As much as our goal may be to change the first principle, it's also to promote critical discussion of this issue. So that's my future work, and again, I'd greatly appreciate your support in it. However, I'd also really like to support you in your future work. You've already shared how you've worked to draw our circle of moral community wide, but before we go our separate ways, I'd ask that you think about how you can draw it wider still. And again, if you're willing, please text it in. This time, the code is 60887. Become more. I'm not sure, but I'll think more about it. Become more educated about our global issues.
Draw the circle, draw it wide.
Keep learning.
Draw the circle.
Commit again every new day.
Draw the circle, draw it wide.
Include our children in the conversation. Read, think, act.
Draw the circle, draw it wide.
Keep learning. Speak up.
Draw the circle, draw it
Become more thoughtful about what beings provide my food.
Draw the circle, draw it wide.
Be more vocal about UUism.
Draw the circle, draw it wide.
Talk to people I wouldn't usually talk to. And share the love of community.
Draw the circle, draw it wide.
Promote the inherent non-superiority of human animals.
Draw the circle, draw it wide.
Any from the audience?
Check out the UU Animal Ministry.
Draw the circle, draw it wide.
One more.
Teach and learn.
Teach and learn. So thank you very much for your time, your attention, and your willingness to share. And thank you for drawing the circle wide enough to inspire me. And thank you for your commitment to draw it wider still.